Okay, I'd like to introduce our next speaker, Martin Mallinson.
Hi guys, my name is Martin, I'm from ESS Technology. I'll begin with something of an apology really. I'm not primarily a Lisp programmer at all. What I do for a living is I design electronic circuits, I design silicon chips. Now, silicon chip design, I've been in the business since about 1977, and originally I worked in the Boston area. I worked for a company called Analog Devices, and Analog Devices bought very many symbolic Lisp machines. And I think it'll be interesting for you to know that basically I was a design engineer, and my boss said, Martin, a team of Lisp programmers are going to work for you. And why would we do that? And my boss, whose name was Peter Holloway, whose brother was one of the guys heavily involved with symbolics, said, because these Lisp guys are going to develop a system that you want to do IC design. So originally, I was presented with a program running on the symbolics machine, and the keyboard looked incredibly difficult to use. It was very hard. But I noticed that I could say to this team of guys, I could say, I don't like that. I'd like that to be different. And within a space of about an afternoon, they would come back to me and they'd have the thing I requested. And after a while, I realized these guys were moving far faster than a group in the same company who my wife worked for, where they did C-based tools. These guys on the symbolics machine were screaming ahead, developing code. And so I eventually asked to be sent to school to learn how to do it. And I went down to symbolics and attended a symbolics training course and came away from that training course thinking, my goodness, I can do anything. I can do anything on this symbolics machine. I liken it to my motorcycle. And stick with me for a minute. I have this Honda ST1100 motorcycle, and it goes very, very fast. And if I twist the handle grip too far, I kill myself. Because the machine, the motorcycle, does not limit me. The limitation is me. The motorcycle will always go faster around a corner than I dare do it. And I had that same experience with a symbolics machine. The limiting factor is going to be me. And frankly, I'm one of the guys who likes that feeling, because I feel as though if I can think of it, I can probably do it. Now, long story short, symbolics, of course, disappeared. I spent a lot of time, because I loved symbolics. I'm going to be doing something. You can either watch the screen or listen to me. I loved the symbolics machine. So, of course, when the symbolics machine appeared to be dying, I spent a lot of time defending it. I said, no, this is a great machine. You guys should really try it. It'll really help you out. Do electronic design and so forth. And frankly, it took me a long time to realize that's not the best approach. The best approach is to simply say, look, if you are right that Lisp is something special, then you ought to be able to demonstrate it in the marketplace. Never mind going around proselytizing about Lisp and evangelizing Lisp. Let's just get on with the job. And I did that. I started a few companies. And at each of those companies, I designed electronic chips for people, for the likes of Intel, Ford Microelectronics, PMC Sierra, Analog Devices, a bunch of others. And I always did it in a Lisp environment. And in that Lisp environment, I was successful. And I sold two companies. Two of my companies were bought out by various other companies. And each time, I put together a contract that said that you can have all my chips and everything that I do for electronics, but there's a little thing in the contract that says you don't get any Lisp code. And of course, nobody who bought my companies cared about that. What's the Lisp code all about, right? So each time, I was able to hang on to the Lisp code and do it again and again and again. Now, eventually, the company I currently work for, ESS Technology has figured it out, and now it's unlikely that I'm going to be able to do that again, because the company wants to buy the underlying code. Okay. Now, what should be happening here is that I should be able to run this entire thing from Lisp, because I said everything I do in Lisp. I'm doing a presentation for you today, so this presentation is a Lisp program. And all I'm going to do is I'm just going to advance through the Lisp program, and you'll quickly figure out how it's working. The Lisp listener's running up there. It's driving PowerPoint down here. Okay. Now, let me get into some basic stuff. I, again, feel as though this is going to be a great experience for me, because I'm usually in front of a group of engineers. and I spend 90% of my conversation explaining to them what Lisp is. This is going to be wonderful because you guys, by the time I've introduced it, you'll have read it and you'll have got it. Look, engineers don't use numbers like 1e to the minus 5. We just don't think like that. We think in terms of numbers like 1k, 10k, 1 micro, and so on. So the first, and I hope you will think it trivial thing that we might want to do is we might want to tell Lisp how to read those kind of numbers. And we can do that, but it surprisingly, tell me if I'm wrong, guys, but I cannot find a way to do that in common Lisp. I cannot find a way in common Lisp to get the Lisp reader to read that thing as 1,000. I can't do it. My symbolics machine hackers, guys, they changed the symbolics machine for me. They modified the read table compiler or something like that, and symbolics machine did it. So I've persuaded Franz, common Lisp, to read 1K, one numbers like that. There you go, 1K times 3.3 micro equals 3.3 millis. I do that by putting a function wrapper around it. Everything I'm going to show you today, including all the tools you're going to see, the code for it, you can get it. I don't care. That's not how I make my living. I make my living selling chips. You can get the code, see what you make of it. Please, take it. Make it better. Give it me back. Carl has put it on the website somewhere. It's under International Lisp Conference /MartinM. Martin Malice, Martin M. Okay. So, look, format U. You can trivially add an extra format directive that prints these things. And while you're at it, you can persuade Lisp to read numbers like minus 20 dBs and 3% as well. So what? Well, you'll find it's very good. You'll see in a minute. We get some examples. Also, engineers often work in the logarithmic domain. In the logarithmic domain, there's no loop path, so we make one. Loop for I being locked from 1K to 10K, decade 5, collect format. You can see it working there. I don't need to spend any more time describing it. So these are some basic changes to Lisp, and you chaps would find them relatively easy to do, I'm sure. Now, remember I said that if you're really right about Lisp being something special, then you really have to show somebody who hasn't the slightest interest in Lisp that it can actually do something different. Well, in the business of electronic design, there are two languages which dominate, Verilog and VHDL. And my goodness, they are good. Don't get me wrong, they are very good. Verilog can describe the electronic devices within a chip, a program by Synopsys can take that Verilog description and actually implement the chip. Lisp can't do that. Why might Lisp be better than these languages that are specifically designed to do it? Because, unfortunately, the vendors don't focus on the key thing. Look, in ESS technology, we don't compete against Intel. We don't compete against analog devices. We compete against some Joe Schmo startup company in Taiwan or China. And these guys move very quickly. They'll forgive me if you're from that part of the world, but frankly, they don't necessarily respect intellectual property. They just want to get to the bag of money. Right, so what Verilog and VHDL do, they're beautiful, but they do not take you from soup to nuts. They do not take you all the way from, I have this crazy idea, maybe we can make a digital filter differently, to, hey, I tested it and it works and it's on a chip. Lisp can do that. I'll show you. Stick with me, because I know you're not electronic design guys, but this is not at all difficult. One of the interesting building blocks of electronic design thing is that engineers call sigma-delta modulators. Sigma-delta modulators are very cool. Here's a simple one. All it is, guys, is an adder and a state. All it does is every time you click this guy, every time you cause this guy to advance, it just adds itself to whatever you put on the input. But because it works in a fixed width, this adder overflows and generates a bit out. And perhaps you can see, if you're thinking quickly, that the rate at which it overflows will be proportional to the number that you put in there. That is a first-order sigma-delta modulator. And here it is in Lisp. You wouldn't believe the amount of time I have to spend describing this function to electronic design engineers. And I'm not even going to talk about it. You've got it, I'm sure. One state variable state, returning a lambda binding of that variable state. I wrote this particularly cryptically because I knew you'd understand it. I wouldn't write it like this if I was showing it to other guys. But look, you can see that that works, right? What can you do with these things? Well, the great thing is, these sigma-delta modulators can solve differential equations. And The business advantage that this gives ESS technology is that if you reach down the books from the library and you say, I'm going to go through it a bit more slowly because we're going to zip through the list, so I'm going to spend a little more time on this. If you reach down the books from the library, how to implement a digital filter, there are two classic types, infinite impulse response filters, finite impulse response filters, that can be implemented in many ways. This is a third way of implementing a digital filter, and it's better. And it's better because it's cheaper. It's lower cost to do it this way. If you take that first order sigma delta modulator and connect it to a second one, the state of the second one here will change at a rate proportional to the number input over there. There it is. Okay. If you therefore connect two of them in a loop like this, you get a constrained equation, d squared y by dx squared equals minus y. You know straight away what that's going to do. It's going to generate an oscillator. Here's the Lisp code to do it. Call two instances of the first order sigma delta modulator, do some more stuff, return another lambda. Right. Now, again, to you and I, it's trivial to understand how that sigma delta one works. It's created two lambda-bound variables which are independent. And yet, that's a hard concept for engineers to grasp. Trust me, because I have 15 guys who work for me. It's very difficult for a very bright guy, who came out of school way ahead, it's very difficult for him to grasp that, right? And that, frankly, is an issue with Lisp, and I don't know what to do about that, but it's very hard for smart people to understand. Now, part of this thing is it's actually going to run, so that actually ran. I'll just back up for a second, look. You can see what...
Do you guys know other languages?
Pardon me?
Do they know Fortran and C?
What I find is, of the guys who do engineering, their preference is immediately to use MATLAB. They all want to use MATLAB. If they've done the right stuff at school, they definitely know Verilog, and if they've had any involvement with consulting, they definitely know VHDL. C they might know, C++, I don't find that, frankly, amongst the engineers. C++ seems to be kind of a little stretch too much, I guess, and they don't. And engineers, frankly, don't need it. It used to be some years ago when I lived and worked in Boston, we could get guys out of MIT that could actually use Lisp from day one, and I'm told that a similar situation existed in Berkeley for a while where guys out of Berkeley could do Lisp, but it's not true anymore. It's definitely not true anymore. Okay, so look, that thing ran. Again, you can see what's going on there. You can also see clearly that this function plot generated this little plot window here. You can see how the plot window works. You'll see all this in a minute, but it's all based on... It generated that dialog box dynamically. I'll explain how that worked. It's got all sorts of bells and whistles and features. We'll have a look at some more of them in a second. The point being, look, we were able to model a sigma delta modulator, constrain it, run it, test it, and got a sine wave coming out of it. Okay. That was a tiny example. I'm going to show you now a real example. This is not invented. This is inside virtually all ESS DVD chips. ESS has the vast proportion of the DVD VCD business, and we're trying to get into digital television. This class of filter is patentable and is intellectual property of ESS. You can look it up on the web if you wish, on the US Patent Office thing there. You can find out how it works because it's published already. But basically, it consists of two sigma-delta modulators, a whole bunch of stuff to do with normalize, denormalize. It's a detail, right? And returns this lambda, I say label, returns the label function filter. As an aside, I've been programming Lisp since I went to school at Symbolics in 1985. You know what? It never occurred to me that you could return... And I'd always returned a lambda, and a lambda prints horribly. It just says, you know, some nasty lambda closure thing. When this guy prints, it prints filter, so it helps me a little bit understand what I've got. Again, I digress. Tell me how to get around this. Here's a function filter that returns an object called a filter, which when I'm done, I will bind to a variable called filter. Now, that kind of thing, again, is very hard for all the users to grasp. Okay, now, Lisp is quicker from soup to nuts because it can model the hardware in the middle. But if you were staring at Lisp code, you would find that a lot of what I was doing in the Lisp code was preventing Lisp from abstracting the integer to infinite length. I was forcing Lisp to work with a fixed length integer. So it can model the hardware, but the real win is that all the verification and test functions are in the same environment. And here, this one just ran. Look, that ugly named function. Plot frequency response from quadrature time domain given filter, do your stuff, 10K minus 10 dB. And you can see straight away why I modified the reader. I mean, to an engineer, you see, that makes sense. Analog input minus 10 dBs, F operate 10 megs, runtime 100 milliseconds. You don't want to type all the other stuff. This is much more intuitive to use. And again, it's now generated the phase and amplitude response from this guy. I'm just going to mess around with these guys and tidy it up a little bit. The point being, there are two plots there. One's decibels, one's the phase. Okay. And again, there's another example. There's another verification function. It's actually running now as I'm speaking. Often you want to test a system in the FFT domain, and it's actually now simulating that filter. It's doing over, well over 10 million points. It's doing many, many points in order to generate the complete frequency domain description. And it's added orthogonal frequency signal to the input. Forgive me while I talk on while this thing does the calculation. Exactly. Now, you are quite right. I am just looking at the pictures. But in fact, inside here are all the test functions already defined. So, for example, generate data accuracy versus sample time. All of the test functions to measure phase and frequency response are built into the graph plotter. And if I get time, I'll show you. I don't want to disturb the flow of the thing. They generate textual results, which in a minute I'll show you how they're written off into a document, which is running in the background, documenting everything as we go. So the bottom line is, you're quite right. You have to add that extra level, which is look at this graph and, hey, is that really what we want? And so you might want to measure the amplitude of some of these things here. Okay. The plotter I make as a standalone program. The plotter is quite interesting. It can do multiple graphs. It can do time on one of the axes. You can zoom in on time, and it turns to months, days, seconds. It does the right thing, logarithms, mixing all together. And I do it because the plotter became a centre of what the engineers were doing within ESS. And as I mentioned to you, many of the... I'll just give you the statistics. There are 15 guys I work with who know that this is a Lisp-based program and come to me and say, please add this, please add that. There are only two guys, me and another guy, who actually changed the Lisp code for this, which is a bit of a disappointment, but it's hard to bootstrap and get into it. There are then as many as 50 guys who use this tool, the plotter, because to them it looks like a standard Windows program. It has an install, it comes up, it just looks like a Windows program. And you've seen me do it before, but I won't do it again. You'll be more interested when I get to the end.
A quick question. It says it's based on a presentation.
Yes.
Similar to Clint, but this is a kind of graphics.
It is, yeah. Okay. Yeah. This is all. When the Symbolics machines died, I tried for a while running the MacIvories. I tried for a while running the Alpha machines. Didn't work. So we made a strategic... I was part of a company then. We made a strategic decision. Look, we're not going to lose again. We're just going to go with the winner. And sorry, guys, the winner is Microsoft. So I don't like it, but the users like it. So this is all Microsoft. We don't make any... We tried Clint. Huge thumbs down. From the users. From the users. Yeah, it doesn't look like Windows. The windows are not very nice. It's not good. So we switched. And I'll show you something of that now. Look, this is one of the more powerful things that I wrote over the years. It is a totally insurmountable task to try to replicate genera in another environment. It's a mountain of stuff, and I'm intimidated by it. But I try to bring some functionality into it. Look, again, you've read the Lisp code, you're way ahead of me. In the dialog box, dialog set F, various types, make a window. The window looks awful because Lisp has tried its best to place them on the window, and that ain't great. But the next one, tell it a little bit more about what you'd like to do. I'd like there to be a dialog box called dialog box example. I'd like there to be a column where you set A and so on. And now it's beginning to look prettier. And then you can pretty it up some more. It does the obvious thing with columns and rows, forgive me, the pretty printer's not doing a great job here. Dialogue row consisting of dialogue column consisting of things, and so it's put a row of them. You can also do a stack of them. Dialogue stack there. Stack creates those guys. Just a tab on top of one another. And you saw the plotter bring up the window. It's always using these dynamic dialogue boxes. Again, if you're interested in how it works, download the code. It's all there for you to look at and improve, should you care to do so, and give it me back. presentation system, I wrote it again from scratch because it just was not doing what I wanted. I wanted it to look like Windows. I wanted it to use all the Windows stuff. So remember, this is evenings and weekends, and I'm primarily designing chips, but it just frustrates me when the tool won't do what I want. And by the way, I've used all the other tools too, Cadence and Synopsys and all those guys. So again, with output as presentation, define a gesture, define a presentation, so on. Look, here's how it works. You can see up there, I won't bother, based on presentation, blah, 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 gesture generation function. Okay. That's how we're going to redisplay the window. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the Windows paradigm, but basically it works like that. You write a redisplay Windows method on the pane and it does its thing. So this is going to create a background presentation on which is going to be a circle. Okay. And there it is, it just ran. So now we have something that it looks like a Windows window. It does all those gestures. There are a list of them generated dynamically there from the defined gestures which have the generic function to operate on that thing. Notice that the mouse documentation line is perhaps not what you'd expect. The mouse documentation line appears to have multiple things for left. Click left, it says hello there. Now, the other things on left are drag gestures, because Clayman Symbolics didn't have this, but I always liked the way Windows, it didn't execute until you lifted the mouse button. And that allows you to do drags. So if I drag vertically, it goes green. If I drag horizontally, it goes red. There's a single key accelerator on yellow. They're all documented there. So this little presentation substrate is the basis of that plotter. And it's the basis of something else I'll show you in a moment. Now, look, another big deal is that if you're working as a team, and we have design centres in the Far East, in California, where I am now, and up in Canada, which is where I live and work, you have to be able to send them the designs. And that was such a tough problem, much more difficult than I anticipated. Just, it seems obvious, I just send him the file. Well, often a design consists of the relationship between files. If we do a design for a manufacturer called TSMC, he will have sent us a file to represent the things he uses. So we need to send a TSMC file as well. So bottom line is, I eventually bit the bullet and wrote this simple thing. Now, clearly, guys, you know how this works. It's just a textual dump format with a hash table, so it never duplicates the same object. And it works until you really try to do it in earnest, and then you find it doesn't work at all. It doesn't work at all because the files are huge. They take a vast amount of time to read in again. Some of my guys generate FFTs of 10 million points because MATLAB can do a 10 million point FFT, so I do 10 million points. Do you really need that? Probably not. But so if you try to save 10 million points in this, you'll be waiting all day. It doesn't work. What you have to...
If you put up the FASL file, it wouldn't be reading.
Well, you see, okay... I don't know whether there's anybody from France in the room. I'd love to do that, right? But I can't, because that's not part of what they'll give you as part of the thing you can distribute. You cannot distribute the FASL file. Now, there was a nice lady who used to work there, Laura Rose. She gave me a copy anyway, right? But it turns out that it changes. They don't guarantee that it doesn't change from release to release. But frankly, the FASL file is a pretty good way to do it. But I can't, because there's those constraints. So instead, I introduced two reader macros, pound... twiddly bracket and pound square bracket, that break and read the binary thing that comes after. So this guy reads a binary list, that guy reads a binary array. So now it embeds binary in the middle of this file. And then I call bzip on it, which frankly creates a file slightly smaller than the FASL files, to my pleasant surprise. So that I do it that way. And then I send these files around. Now, sending those files around isn't sufficient because, as I mentioned, sometimes a design consists of the relationship between files. So I came up with another thing, which is introduced by the reader pound F. Pound F reads a file just like pound P reads a file, like a path name, but this is a data file. And a data file differs from a regular path name only in that if an object references a data file, when that object is dumped, that data file is dumped into the same file. So that when you undo the object again, out pops that file. And the entire thing are based on logical path names, so in the remote site, they have the corresponding set of logical path names. Okay. Now, a lot of people within my company, and I don't often have the privilege of speaking to Lisp people, but certainly a lot of people who are fans, perhaps, of Linux and open systems, often say, well, the issue, Martin, that you've chosen Microsoft, you will not be able to control the other applications. Well, frankly, guys, that just isn't true. You can actually control all the other Microsoft applications. And there's two ways you can do it. If Microsoft publishes the DDE thing, you can go through that, and France has got support for it, lots of examples, and it's fine. But often, for what I do, and I'm going to show you the real thing in a minute, coming up on this laptop, if it will succeed. But you can do it this way, and again, you've been through it. You simply find the Windows pointer and type to the keyboard of that other application. And that's a reasonably good way of writing a documentation stream in the background. And now, I will show you a complete example of the schematic editor. But I have just remembered as I'm standing here that I did not start the commercial tool which I'm going to use. I did not start its license server. So stare at the schematic for a moment while I try to start the license server for this guy here, because my computer was off. We're going to use another commercially available program to simulate this circuit it's running now. The schematic editor. Schematic editor is a common thing in design. You draw a schematic. You do things with it. We design chips, as I mentioned there. I didn't select that window, excuse me. The schematic editor is a standalone Lisp program. And in fact, this is how I suck people in, frankly. I give them this schematic editor program with its Windows installer. They install it and they use it. And generally, the feedback is good. They like it. And then eventually they start asking for new features. And are any of you in the room from an electronics company at all? Is it worth one guy? All right, I won't go into detail then, but never mind. You know, there are common features that people ask for. I mean, briefly, it's to do with the representation of analog quantities in a circuit. It doesn't matter. And you can add these things to the schematic, and so suddenly the schematic does exactly what they want, and it tends to be impressive, and then they tend to ask for more. Okay. Now I'll fire up the schematic from ground zero. That form schem frame is going to bring up the application here. Would have been nice if that window went behind, wouldn't it? This is the... it looks pretty good. I'm surprised, because it usually works on a much bigger window than this. And if the gentleman from France would care to provide me with the code, I would love to be able to get that window to not hide like that, but I have searched through your source code and there appears to be absolutely no way to do it. But anyway, you can see, there we go, it looks like Windows stuff. And in here, we can draw things. Now, of course, it's very quick, because I've been using it for 20 years to draw things, right? So, choose a process. This is a company in China. They manufacture a 0.15 micron process. Choose a transistor. Put the transistor on the wire. The wire breaks, you know, all the obvious stuff. Just connect a power supply there and there and do all that. These are all presentation system again that I showed you before. There's all the stuff that transistor can do. One interesting thing is, look, I drag to the right and create a wire. I drag vertically and create a wire. Those two gestures are different. One of them is dragging to the right, one of them is dragging down. And there are many times when that turns out to be a useful thing to do. Like all programs, the first piece of credibility comes when you give the guy the undo command and the redo command. Everybody wants that, right? So you got to do all that kind of stuff. Okay. And again, it's organized, I hope, reasonably well. It allows users to define active projects and recent schematics. And here is an example just for you chaps. This is the simplest schematic that one could imagine. It's a CMOS inverter. You can see it has some, you know, nice looking text up here, which looks good, example prizes, you see. Now I'm actually going to do what, you know, people tell me never to do, never to give a real demo. This is a real demo. I'm actually going to simulate it. All the simulations are organized under here. So, for example, and that's important because it means that when this schematic is sent to a site, everything I did to check that schematic is inside the database. So we're now going to run it. And I started this little laptop before the talk here. And so nothing's running. This program, Smart Spice, the list program searched for that program. That program was not running. It started that program. Now, that program is a $10,000 program from Silvaco, and of course they provide me with only the executable. So how can we go about automating, controlling this guy, given that we've only got the executable? Well, like all Windows programs, and I believe actually this is not written in native Windows, they're using some toolkit, it has to have a pointer, a handle to all those windows. And there's actually a fairly easy way to find it. There's a nice little Windows function called get handle under mouse or something. So all I do is I start in the top left-hand corner and I sweep the point across the window. Oh, you can't see my finger moving there. I sweep the point across the window and I just gather all the handles it gives me back. And I say, okay, Smart Spice, it's the third window down. Now, it's a terrible hack, but it works, right? So now we can write to this program, and indeed, as I was talking, it figured it out and it did it. Now frankly, that you wouldn't believe how I had a problem on Sunday, because the new version of Smart Spice won't run with my little hardware key here, so I had to back up a revision. So this is actually the old code. Point is, now it's run, so now I can point to any of these things here, and it will tell me the state of these wires. So, for example, that's at 0 volts, that's at 3.3 volts. I was going to show you that a bit more neatly. Point at the transistor, and it tells you the transistor state. Engineers like this, the saturation voltage, the VDS, and so on. Point at a port, it tells you the current through the port as well. So it's very easy. Now, it's obviously talking to Smart Spice in the background. Or we can run another simulation here, debug, sweep. Run sweep. It's now going to fire up a transient simulation in the background. Once a transient... I'm just going to hit refresh on that, get rid of those. Once a transient has done, I'm just going to make the labels look a little neater. We can point to any of these labels and plot the transient events on that wire. So,
about 5 minutes
left. Yikes, okay. Reconfigured to show the results. There's that plotter again. It's the same plotter with all the plotter features in it. The windows move like the people want them to. Click middle on there, adds the input signal to... Click middle on there, adds the input signal to there. Zoom in, do things like that. Okay, I'm going to now run very quickly through the rest of it. That's one example. Okay, powerful thing is, look, anytime you like, document what I'm doing. Document says... I think you want a Word document in the background, so yeah, that's a reasonable one. Okay, it will now fire up Microsoft Windows in the background, establish the right file name, and you'll see what it does in just a second. I'm waiting for it to... That's taking an awful long time.
So since you started by showing this code that sort of simulated the circuits you were designing...
Yes.
Why do you have to call out to a $10,000...
Ah, yes, good point. I did try to put all the Newton-Raphson simulation code that corresponds to a program called Spice into Lisp. And to some extent, I succeeded. But frankly, I can't keep up. Spice is changing so quickly. It's so very powerful. Companies make money out of Spice programs. It's hard. So I just plug into what those guys do. I can document this. I will assume that it's working. It is working. I can document that in the background. You see what happened is a Word file was opened. The pictures were placed into it. And we can save that Word file as we go. We can also put simulation results into it too. All right, guys. I'm not going to save that. I'm just going to shut that down. So that's an example of a standalone program which is, you know, written in Lisp, and as I say, in my experience, operates to suck people into using the Lisp environment. Okay, so I just want to summarise by communicating that to you guys, because I've spoken to friends of mine in Lisp, and they tend to be a little under stress in the sense that they're often wanting to kind of say, you know, Lisp is a great thing and the world doesn't seem to believe me. And I want to say things like, guys, that's really frankly got nothing to do with it. You know, in our capitalist system, the truth is it's just a tool to help you get the job done and hopefully to beat your competitors. And for me, it certainly was a profound change when I realised that I did not need to defend the symbolics machines or the death of the symbolics machines. The point is, just get on with the job. And I've used it over the years, and there's more than 20 patent pending circuits from this because it's easy to develop and try wild and crazy things in the Lisp environment. As I mentioned, you know, users don't seem to want to learn Lisp, and if you just allow them to experience what it can do, that's the best way to do it, I feel. And then please download and look at this code, and if you make it better, send it back. If you look at it and think, gosh, that was obviously written by an electronic engineer, that's probably true. But there you go. Thanks very much, guys.
We can have about a couple minutes for questions.
Okay.
Can you display the URL?
Yeah.
Carl only just installed it before I walked into this room, so he'll have to tell you.
It's online. If you go to internationalispconference.org/martinm.
Okay.
So all there.
Okay. Cool. All right. Thanks, guys. Any more questions? Are we? Oh, yeah.
You seemed a little upset that there were two people supporting 50. What ratio would you propose?
it's not so much supporting, because I do find that I can support them pretty quickly. What I guess disappoints me a little bit is that, well, frankly, look, I deal with this issue, right? Every time an engineer wants to run those Lisp-based hardware simulations, I have to buy a license from France. Now, they're not guys writing Lisp applications. They are guys using the Lisp compiler to do the job, right? So the first problem that I run into is, if I tell my boss, who's down in Fremont, California, I want to buy 10 more Franz licenses.
These are runtime licenses, right?
No, they're not. That's the problem. They're not.
So they're negotiate.
Pardon? I negotiate with those guys. Okay. Well, that's one issue. So it's disappointing for me that I can't give everybody the power to run that, because they would use it.
Yeah.
And the next thing is that, you see, all my users want to use MATLAB. So I didn't show you stuff, but there's a lot of code here that interfaces to MATLAB that allows MAT. In fact, there's an example in those files of a MATLAB interface to Lisp, just so that the guys can use that. And they don't learn Lisp in school, which they used to a few years ago. And it does seem as though, you know, if I was a chap like... If my career was what I expect your careers are, which is based on using Lisp, I think I would worry a little bit, because there seems to be less and less use of it. But for me, I've learned not to care. I just get on with the job, and the statistics show that we tend to do better.
You've been living with that for a long time.
Yeah.
Don't take a poll and ask how many people came. Please don't do that.
Actually, I'm one of them. I came here. Yes, that's right. That's right.
How much, if you were using Java, you know, if under some weird world you could actually like use Java the same way, would they be more comfortable with that, or is it just that they're not actually used to
a particular
sort of general purpose programming?
Look. My feeling is this. I think that there will come a time when it is realized that being able to do things in a programming language is a necessity to do the job. Today it's recognized that familiarity with differential equations and Z-domain responses is something the kids learn because they know you're going to need that to get the job done. I would argue that it's increasingly becoming necessary to be able to use a programming language to get the job done. Lisp is a fantastic choice for that language due to, well, what do I need to say? You guys know better than me. Due to its expressive power, its mathematical completeness. It doesn't blow up when you take the logarithm of -1, for instance. Lisp is a great choice for that. Quite why that is apparently not enough to get people to use Lisp, I don't understand. I suspect there's a hangover from many, many years ago of some distaste for some reason for using Lisp.
I'll be right. Like, I have a good theory that's never been shot down.
Right. Well, thank you again.
Thanks a lot.
No problem.
We'll break until 2:10.